You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
This is the Westbury Radio Show, where we can disagree without being disagreeable. I'm your host, Westbury, a Wall Street Journal best-selling author of Big Things Have Small Beginnings. And today, Ryan Toll and I are going to try to cover a few subjects that are, you know, a little timely, interesting enough. I was looking at a couple things about Donald Trump and the negotiating with North Korea, and it seems to me that I'm a little confused. Is he being too aggressive with his negotiating with North Korea? Is the real end game about getting the nukes removed, or is the real end game something else? What do you think?
Well, I think my opinion is that the answer to is Donald Trump being too aggressive for me is always yes. but I think in a bigger way that he came up in a way in the world where it's all about winning. Not saying that's bad necessarily, right. But so I really believe that his goal there is to win, and he may not have really quantified to everybody what that means to him.
Actually, from a negotiating standpoint, it's sometimes better if you don't have that so set in stone that you don't ignore a good opportunity that presents itself. But I have a feeling that really what he's looking for is really regime change, and that he's pushing him a little too far for.
Well, I don't disagree. I would hope that it's been the goal of. Of the regime change for that family, for the previous Kim Jong whatever,
right,
Il
right.
And now Un, is that the right. I'm not versed, but I think that you have a guy there who probably, in my opinion, is the only guy that's even farther off his rocker than our current president, and I mean that sort of tongue in cheek, but here's a guy that says, hey, when I was born, a new star appeared in the sky. And I played golf once and I shot 18 and 18, so I see no reason to do it any further. I feel like that's scary.
It is. But, the thing is that I'm afraid a lot of people are missing that really an awful lot of shooting wars start as trade wars. Even if you look at World War II with Japan, that war did not start because of political disagreements as much as it did trade disagreements.
Sure.
that were being leveraged to gain political positions.
I agree. I mean, there were some others. I mean, I think the Axis, even though the Japanese didn't meet their quote-unquote ideal of the German perfect person, the perfect right. specimen, they did have the largest standing army in the world.
Right.
And Germans tend to be pretty precise. And they knew that without having the largest standing army in the world on their side, they would be at a disadvantage.
Well, and the Japanese were upset because we had cut off their steel supply.
Sure.
And we were upset because they were cutting off our rubber supply. And, I'm oversimplifying it. But,
right, right.
But that's really what got things going. They would not have had the raw materials to continue their expansion in Asia, which was – definitely at the top of their to-do list.
So and I don't want to get off track, but just one of the really interesting things, the best optical things, the best glasses, we would call it, so binoculars, rifle scopes, distance mm-hmm. scopes, in the world still to this day come from Germany mm-hmm. and Japan.
Yeah.
And so at the advent of World War II, that was a big problem because we didn't have great manufacturing of what we'd call glass.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think today maybe that's I think loophole is still made in the U.S. But really, it's very interesting. But to trade, right? You don't think about that.
Really, most shooting wars are really ignited because of economics.
Sure.
And if we're going to get into this tug and pull with North Korea like this, it really seems to me as though we may be pushing things a little far. And I'm not saying that I'm made up my mind on it by any stretch. I mean, I really do understand that if you're going to negotiate and hope to get where you want to be, you have to start off for asking for more than what you're willing to settle for.
Right.
And if you don't start off in that position, you're just not going to be there where you want.
To me, the question becomes, though, do you negotiate with a guy like Kim Jong-un like you would negotiate with anybody else? Because he's a true textbook narcissist, right? So the real issue is, does he believe his BS?
Well, he did grow up really in Switzerland. That's where he went to school. So, you know, he does have some exposure to the real world. He was not under his true name when he was there. And, you know, he was a student, albeit a very exclusive boarding school where every student was probably treated as if he was the heir apparent to something.
Right, right.
But nonetheless, he does have that exposure, which does, you know, lend a little hope at least.
Well, you would have to hope that there's somebody that's bringing some realistic ideas to him. Although I don't know, I recently said to a friend about he's getting out of the military, and I said, well, you should apply for like Secret Service. You could be in presidential detail, and you're not going to probably like all of this, but the point's the same. He said, no, it'd be a horrible job because being and I was joking with him, but being in Trump support detail, if you try and make him do something you think is better for him and he doesn't like it, he's just going to fire you. And if you just do what he wants, you're not doing your job. And I think – and so that's sort of my take on this country. But I think it spills over in North Korea that there's no winning that, right? You can't be his advisor and really advise him on anything,
right?
Because he doesn't believe that anything you say has validity unless it supports.
Yes, he's a dictator. And yes, he can execute his uncle as he did, as well as anybody else that he wants.
Was that his uncle or his brother that there was like that mysterious – he got stabbed with the
both.
Poisonous
he
pen?
Did, he did both. That was his a half-brother?
Yeah, half-brother, like right, right.
Yeah, but he also had his uncle's life cut short because he was disagreeing in some way with him. I'm not quite sure what all the details were. Who knows? Maybe they had a long, festering feud. I don't
know. So if you happen to be from North Korea and you're listening to this, I believe in North Korea wholeheartedly. And
I don't know what you believe in them about, but I do
It's
understand.
A wonderful country, and Wes is in disagreement with it.
Well, while we're talking about this, I was thinking about Dennis Rodman today too. I forgot to scribble
that
down. Can you believe the guy is involved in a shoplifting ring?
No.
That's crazy.
So I have a real personal Dennis Rodman story.
Okay.
Years ago, I was a cashier for a grocery chain called Farmer Jack when I was in college that mm-hmm. used to be in this market. And I had worked out this deal with them where I would work a double shift on Friday night. I'd work 1 to 9:30 in one shift and then come back at 11 and work 11 to 7:30. And then I could have Saturday day, night, and Sunday off. And
sure.
In college, that was important.
Sure.
So on Friday –
a lot of classes Saturday night and Sundays.
Yeah, there are. Yeah. There were several classes in vodka and some rum.
I understand.
Different schnapps.
Yeah.
But in reality – so Dennis Rodman, this is 100% true. I did this just for a summer. And so in, let's say, the 12 Friday nights that I worked, 8 of those he came in with a buddy of his. Either he had a Mustang convertible that was all customized with the TVs in the back of the seats.
Sure, yeah.
Before that was so – we're talking like the 90s, right?
Right, right.
Or he rode a Harley and he had a buddy that would come with him. And he would buy a 12-pack of beer and a box of condoms. And then if he was riding his motorcycle, he would take the condoms out of the box and he'd put them in his boot. He'd like wrap them around his leg in his boot. And that was his thing. And I mean I sold him that. That is not an exaggeration that I sold him that 4 or 5 times. In that time period.
Well, and at that time, Dennis Rodman was on the Detroit Pistons.
He was on the Pistons.
And I think he was considered one of the Pistons' yes. bad boys.
Yeah, he was.
You know?
He was. And
so, yeah, I get it. Yeah, you know?
But so that was – and by super tall. That's, you don't realize how tall somebody is. I'm 6 foot, right? So you're like, yeah. He just made me feel really, really tiny.
I hear you.
So he's friends with – with Kim Jong-un, right? They're like – they hang out. And...
Yeah, they're buddies, you know. I don't know where that all stems from, I'm sure they share a beer once in a while. I hope they don't share condoms, but, whatever. I don't really fully get that whole thing with Dennis going over there. It doesn't seem to – doesn't seem to have made a lot of headway for us. But nonetheless, it is a worrisome situation that this sort of pressure could force – not force, but could lead to somebody acting out in an immature way. And I just – you know, that could happen on either side. You know?
Well, that's true. And it's just downright scary, right, that we know he has nuclear capability. To what extent is gray, but we know that he does. And it's in my lifetime probably the first time that I've had real fear that there could be a nuclear launch, right? Like, you know, really since the whole, you know, denuclearization of Cuba, you know, during Kennedy, you know, I don't know that the country's felt the kind of level of perhaps some of the Middle East, right? As we talk, I think we're going to talk a little later about Iran, but
yeah.
I tell you, there's some fear there. And I mean, who I think is really afraid is we talked about Japan earlier. But, you know, they could reach Japan with –
they fired over Japan. I don't know how that's not an act of war. You know, the other thing about North Korea, and we want to try to wrap this up because we need to go to a break in just another minute or so. But, you know, when we seize one of their ships and take it to our place, you know, you know, that's like really enforcing an embargo.
Right.
And even if it's an embargo that the United Nations, you know, decided was all right – the reason why we didn't call the Bay of Pigs, Cuban Missile Crisis an embargo and called it a quarantine,
yeah,
is because an embargo has always been considered an act of war. And, you know, it's not a small issue. And I know that that ship had already been toured someplace, but when we seized it, that's a very aggressive physical move in a conversation. Of course, they still have the Pueblo, I know, but nonetheless.
Oh, yeah. I forgot the Pueblo's still there from
– oh, yeah.
I mean
– it's a big trophy.
Yeah. You can tour it, right?
I don't know that you can, but I can't. You
no,
know,
no.
May,
but
maybe
but,
I know you're a little left than
yeah,
I am,
well,
so you're probably welcome yeah. there. But, you know.
You didn't bring your little book today.
No, I forgot my little red book.
But I mean, really, I mean, but it can be toured, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go to a break right now. When we get back, we're going to be talking a little bit about how North Korea is being affected by China and how China is getting pulled into this whole thing, and you know a little bit about that embargo that just rolled out. But let's hear from our sponsors.
I don't have a pedigree. I wasn't the result of careful breeding, so you won't see me at a pet store. But I do love belly rubs and long walks. I can learn tricks if you'll teach me. I may not be a showstopper, but I'd love to be a heartstopper. And I'd love a family if I had one. Come meet me at your local Humane Society. Visit humanesociety.org to learn more.
Because of Shriners Hospitals for Children, I can play basketball. I could climb stairs.
I can write my name.
At Shriners Hospitals for Children, love is caring for a child, regardless of the family's ability to pay. If you know a child we can help, visit ShrinersHospitalsForChildren.org.
Masons Among Us, brought to you by Michigan Masons.
Nickname Woz. He is an inventor, programmer, and technology entrepreneur who co-founded Apple. He is known as pioneer of the personal computer revolution of the 1970s and 80s, and he single-handedly developed the Apple I. His name, Steve Wozniak, a proud member of the Masonic fraternity.
Brotherhood, fellowship, community. Be a Mason. Go to wearethemasons.org to find out more.
Welcome back. This is the Westbury Radio Show, and this is our People's Voice segment. I'm Westbury, and our spotlight today is moving into China a little bit. Ryan Toll is here with me. And, you know, this whole thing with China, all this embargo stuff and, you know, getting in each other's face about things, you know, It's I realize that it's important, and I realize that we would like it resolved to our satisfaction. But I don't know whether it's possible for the Chinese to really go the full measure. And again, when you are negotiating, you usually ask for more than what you are willing to settle for. So I'm concerned that there may be first of all, I do believe that this is tied with North Korea.
I think there's a peace that goes between the two. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, all of a sudden when Trump's having problems with China and the trade thing, and we're going to put down the hammer and raise the tariffs, what happens? Rocket Man fires one off.
Yeah, well, there's got to be some connection there, right? It only seems – and I'm not convinced there isn't some connection to Russia there too. But, you know, I think there's – we've benefited from the last couple of decades, maybe three decades of really being the true world power, right?
Right.
Certainly economically so.
Sure.
And militarily enough respect to keep people from wanting to push too hard against us directly.
Right.
But
right.
But I think that – you know, going head to head with China is a lot like we talked a little earlier about World War II. I think you're getting into that kind of territory, right? Where they need us economically, though. I think certainly.
Yeah, but they have like a 50-year plan and a 100-year plan.
Yeah.
We have right now a 2-year plan,
right?
That may change and get thrown out completely,
right?
During the next election. And when you're able to have that sort of a timeline or horizon that you're working with, you have a lot of advantages that we simply don't have in these sort of negotiations. They're playing the long game, no question about it. We're never playing the long game. We're always playing the short game.
By the nature of how we are, I think.
Absolutely.
I don't disagree with that.
Absolutely.
And not that I believe that we need to be a monarchy or anything, but I think that the nature of how we were established as a country and how we work keeps you from having a set goal.
Well, and I do understand too that that's better for us because our lives are only so long.
Right, right.
So and it's one thing to plan for how it's going to be in 50 years, but I don't think I'm going
to
be here.
Well,
in 50 years.
To be fair, you know, you think if someone came to you today and said far-reaching, let's just say, hey, Wes, I'm going to need everything you have right now, your house, cars, everything. But here's the deal. And we'll give you food and a place to live, but that's all you're going to have, subsistence level. But for your kids' kids, they all do really well. You're going to have a hard time following that.
Well, even if I was willing to accept that sort of a proposition, which maybe I am, how do I know they're going to fulfill it?
Well,
I'm not going to be around to collect.
Well, it turns out
like,
when you have a militaristic government and they say, that's an ingenious idea.
Yeah. Don't worry. I'll pay you next week.
Right, yeah.
You know, I don't know that that's a great plan. And I'm not sure that that China is in a position where they really need to resolve things as quickly as we think they do. You know, they can take a lot more hits than we do.
Right.
They're not going to get voted out of office.
Right.
And you're right.
The political side, they don't feel.
Right. The Chinese people may be penalized by a trade war. But the Chinese elites who run the frickin' country aren't going to be penalized by it.
No.
And they're not going to have civil unrest that they'll tolerate because they'll just call in some troops from some other province.
Well, that's right. No, it'd be Tiananmen Square Part 2, right? They'll just roll some tanks through and that'll be the end of it. The thing about it is you know, that they do have other issues coming, and they may see some problems, maybe not civil war because to your point, the military's pretty – but – you know, now this is going to surprise you coming from me, but I saw Condoleezza Rice speak, and one of the things that she said was what isn't communicated a lot is that because they've had all of these population controls in place and
sure.
because there's this that they tend to abandon or euthanize female babies,
right.
which
right.
that's not a discussion. I think we all disagree with that.
Right.
But that their population is heavily male. And so they're going to actually have the reverse problem with population in the near future, where they're not going to have enough people, and they already are getting to the point where they don't have all of their economic might, so to speak, is based around the fact that they have no labor costs because they have a lot of people. Much like Russia in World War II, their defense was, we're just going to keep sending soldiers. I don't care how old they are. I don't care if they're
right,
armed.
Right.
I don't care if they have uniforms.
Right.
Well, it's the same idea, and you know, so that China faces that in the not too distant future, and so. So whether they're posturing that they think it's okay to have this sort of trade war with us or whether they realize it's going to be a bigger issue, Maybe they don't want to have all of the sales. I'm being a little, you know.
I understand.
Helicopters and tinfoil hat.
Yeah, the problem with the trade in embargoes or the trade levies, whatever they are,
sure, yeah.
with China is that it'll hurt us and them,
right.
And it may hurt them much worse than it will hurt us. But it will hurt our politicians that are
right.
pushing the trade and levies and taxes and so on. It's going to hurt them worse than anybody because we'll vote them out.
That's right.
So, you know, you get a few all of a sudden if everything that we get from China goes up in price, 30% or 40%, people are going to get ticked off.
I know we don't want to take too much time on this, but here's my. So is that actually really a good thing, Wes? If that were to happen, let's say that everything went up 30%. So we became back to a nation of manufacturers, right, which made us the power in World War II. If we went back to being a country of manufacturers as opposed to consumers, would that actually be a good thing for us as a country?
Well, let me tell you something. If we actually went back to a country of manufacturers, I'm sure that it would on paper – be a good thing for the country. And you know what? We should go back. We should have a larger share of manufacturing. But if we really take all of our commerce away from China.
No, that would be bad.
Trust me, there will be a war.
Oh, yeah. No,
there's no question about
that. What protects us from China, I think I said it earlier, they depend upon us economically.
Right.
Because we consume all the goods they make. Because it turns out they don't have any money with their people buy any goods.
Right. Henry Kissinger used to say that the United States would never go to war with a country that had a McDonald's. And what he was really saying is that when you have a commerce in twisted relationship with another country, if they hit you and they bleed too,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's the reality of that situation. But if you try to extract yourself from that sort of relationship, you get into shooting wars. That's when it really happens. You know, when we cut off, steel and they can't manufacture or they cut off rubber and we needed it or whatever it is, when they have resources that we need and right now we need their labor pool to be able to help provide the standard of living that we expect. But you're right, absolutely, they have to be able to accept our goods on the same level playing field. And what – you know, this is odd. This is the sort of thing that you can expect when you're dealing with a communist country, a totalitarian country. Yeah, they're subsidizing everything. Half of the businesses in China that we do business with are owned in large part by the People's Republican Army.
Right.
You know? So what the heck is that about? So when we buy that whatever it is, it's supporting their military infrastructure to an extent. Now, that makes it very confusing. And it's also, you know, I have some relatives who are Chinese and I have some relatives that come over from China that we talk to sometimes. You know, the people in Hong Kong are scared to death about what's going on. They're scared to death, not so much about the trade issues, but they're just the transition that's already started there because they're so used to the democratic freedoms that we enjoy that they can see it coming.
Right.
And I have friends of my family that are from China who tell about, you know, executions in the town square. And yes, they have a smaller criminal problem perhaps than a lot of countries because they have the hammer that they drop. It's not you're innocent till you're proven guilty. You're right. Guilty until you prove yourself innocent. And by the way, we're not going to listen to you.
Right. And you don't have a lot of time to – yeah, right. So
Right. You know, there was a – I don't necessarily agree with this at all, but there was a scientist recently who was involved in splicing or gene splicing or whatever it is on a human birth. And it was to try to avoid the passing of an HIV –
Yeah, that was Chinese scientists, wasn't it?
Yeah, Chinese scientists. They decided that that was against the law. They didn't have a law that said anything like that, but they decided that it was against the law, and he disappeared. And nobody's seen him in a year.
Okay, weird.
You know,
I wonder what could have possibly happened.
Can you imagine if that happened in this country? You know, I mean, we could have the worst guy in the world, biggest criminal ever, and if nobody could find him for a while because the government had him,
yeah.
It would be a huge issue. So it's a very confusing problem. You know what? We're going to take another break here, and then we're going to try to hit back about a little bit about this rise of nationalism and whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. And, you know, I've always found that it doesn't matter what it is. There's good and bad in it. So hopefully we'll be able to find both. So let's visit our sponsors real quick here, and we'll be right back.
This is Brad Paisley. How does a good boy become a good man? DeMolay believes that it takes good friends, good activities, and good role models. DeMolay is the only nonprofit youth organization where young men decide on the activities, plan them, and carry them out. But it takes adult volunteers to be the role models that steer them in the right direction. A celebrity isn't necessarily a role model. A role model is a caring, concerned adult like you. To learn more, call 1-800-DEMOLAY or visit them on the web at demolay.org.
Optimus volunteers contribute time and money to programs that inspire and bring out the best in kids. Optimus give leadership, guidance, and hands-on involvement to activities that shape young people's lives. Optimus help form positive attitudes in kids, and Optimus create opportunities for youth as they develop into adulthood and become role models for future generations. Optimus are doing all these things right here, right now.
Masons Among Us, brought to you by Michigan Masons.
Listed at 7'1" and weighing 325 pounds, he was one of the heaviest players ever to play in the NBA. He won 4 NBA championships and numerous MVP awards in his 19-year career and is currently a basketball TV analyst. His name, Shaquille Shaq O'Neal, a proud member of the Masonic fraternity.
Brotherhood, fellowship, community. Be a Mason. Go to wearethemasons.org to find out more.
Welcome back. I'm Wes Berry, and we're into our People's Voice segment here. I'm with Ryan Toll, and we're moving our spotlight a little bit to the right, and we're wondering about the rise in nationalism, and not just the rise in nationalism in this country. But, you know, I saw a great hat the other day. It said, "Make Britain Great Again." I thought to myself, now, isn't that an interesting hat? I don't know. I think that nationalism is one of those things that it depends what your definition of it is. You know, my definition is that, you know, you're going to put your country and the people in your country and your things first in your, you know, evaluation of a situation. So all things being equal, on a purchase and one item is being manufactured in China and the other one's being manufactured here. And if all things are equal on it, well, I'm going to buy the one that's manufactured here. On the other hand, if I'm going to save a buck on the one from China, I'm probably going to put myself first and my own economic well-being first and pick up the one that's from China. I think that's human nature. And I also think it's human nature to want to support your family and your community and your country. But I know that there's another piece of it. And the other piece of it is when nationalism winds up being a code word for being bigoted or white supremacist or whatever you want to call it. And then when you say, oh, I want to make it great again, I want to make it like it was, does that mean you want to make it like pre-civil rights America?
Well, I think that's the fear.
I think that is the fear. I don't think it's a rational fear, but I think it's the fear.
Well, I do think it's rational, though. I mean, I think it's a real – I think it's real, and I'm not saying you or you know, my other friends who happen to be conservative necessarily feel that way. I certainly know you not to be somebody who's bigoted. And
that's big of you to say.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know that, Wes. I mean, that's not a – but I do know that there are people out there that their view is – that they want things, everything here to be Christian based. They want it to, they believe there is no racism or no exclusionism of other races, which is simply not true in my eyes. We've talked about this before on the show and even back when we were on the radio, we talked about it a bit, that, you know, one of the reasons that there was nobody crying to build a wall between Canada and the U.S. is because the people in Canada happen to be white and the people coming from Mexican happen to have brown skin. And I think that's the part of nationalism that is out there today.
And I believe that a lot of people interpret it that way. But, you know, you don't put a patch where there isn't a leak. You know, if your roof is leaking, and you decide to re-roof the whole roof, maybe that's because you can see that the rest of it's going. But if you've only got a leak on one side, you're going to patch one piece of the roof.
Sure, but
so it's a straw man argument, in my opinion, to say, why are you willing to put a wall up down here where all these people are coming in, but you're not willing to put a wall up over here where no one's coming in?
Well, I don't think no one's coming in. I think we did look the statistics up, and I concede that there was more quote-unquote illegal immigration coming through the southern border.
More than 500 million people so far this year, and the year is just getting started.
I can't.
And last year it was 300 and some thousand.
I don't think that's true. I don't think there's more people that want to come to the country in our current administration than wanted to before. I don't think it's a welcoming place to be.
I just need a fact check quick. You just said 500 million.
Right.
That's more than the population of this country.
You know what? I did say that wrong. It's 500,000. I'm sorry. And by the way, that I got from CNN this morning. And that's probably why I was confused. But it's 500,000.
Well, Wes has never actually watched CNN before.
No, I was watching it this morning.
He has one of those TVs in his fridge that he was watching while he was making his coffee or something.
Those are cool,
by the way. I don't want to get off the top, but those are really neat.
I had flicked over to CNN this morning because the Fox News was going a little too far left for me, and I was trying to find a little bit of refreshment. But anyway.
Wes is funny, folks. If you don't know that, Wes is a funny guy. Listen, though. I think the problem is that nationalism has become a code word, not just for bigotry, but for us not doing our part as the leader of the free world, of the Western world, there's some frustration that we spend what I see so often, and I know you see it too, and let's use Facebook, and we're going to talk about Facebook a little bit later, but on Facebook, you see all these memes shared, this information shared where they say, we spend all this money in other countries and on illegal immigrants and not our own soldiers. Well, it's simply not true. You can spend money both places. But
I think that nationalism has become a dog whistle that goes to two different groups. And they're two groups that you would never think would come to the same whistle. It's a group that goes to the white nationalists, I'll call them. And I don't mean that anyone who's a nationalist that's white is in that group. I'm talking about, you know, the real KKK guys, the real Nazi guys, okay?
Yeah, Trump's father's friends.
Those nutcases are – definitely, when they hear that nationalism, they think it's calling to them. And I believe that when that same whistle is blown by a liberal candidate or a Democratic individual, the far left thinks that it's a dog whistle for them also to take up arms against. And I find that unfortunate that the definition of a word has become so divisive. I would never put the definition with it that is being put with it by the far left or the far right.
I agree with that.
And if I look it up in the dictionary, maybe I'm a literalist. You know,
There's a lot of gray in your life, Wes. You're a literalist.
I've always been a contextualist on everything. But perhaps in this one genre, like words, maybe I'm a little bit more of a – but – you know, the important thing for us to also recognize that this is not just a phenomenon in our country. When I said that about make Britain great again, it's a real hat. They're really wearing it. You know, this whole Brexit thing. Mm-hmm, is that how they say it?
Brexit.
Right, Brexit. So what would it be if Italy was going to leave? Would it be, you know –
It'll leave. You should trademark that.
You know what? I'm going to see if it's available. I'm going to try to get the URL later today, and hopefully it'll leave.
I don't want to derail us, but did you see where that someone bought the www.trumphotels URL? And then they posted all of the immigrants being held in the Trump Hotel. It was very humorous.
You'd think
a billionaire would take the time to buy all the websites he could think of for that $12 or whatever they cost.
You know what? I've been down that line. There is always another URL that you should get.
Yeah, I know you have a few. Yours happened to be your name with some other stuff attached to it, but I've
owned hundreds and hundreds of URLs over the years.
I'm gonna trademark "Make Wesley Berry Great Again" tonight. I'm gonna go home and get that URL.
You know, getting a URL doesn't mean you have the trademark for it.
But I can post stuff on there.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? We're gonna move on at this point, and we're gonna be leaving this segment of our show, and we're gonna be going to another segment in a moment. So thank you for joining us for this segment, and we'll look forward to entertaining you again soon. This is Wes Berry, and I'm happy to join you again. I'm here with Ryan Toll, and we're going to be visiting our segment on success, the success factor segment. By the way, I've recently authored a book called Big Things Have Small Beginnings, which is a Wall Street Journal bestseller. It was number 8 on the Wall Street Journal list. I was also on the Barnes & Noble list. I was number 2 in their top 5, right between Howard Stern and Michelle Obama. I think that I was put there to make sure that they didn't fight with each other. You know, like at school when you put somebody in between. I think that's why I was there. But I'd like to think that. Actually, I'd rather think that people bought my book. But
if you're lucky, that's the reason.
Yeah. So, Ryan, you know, we've been talking about a lot of things over the last few weeks. And, is Mark Zuckerberg too much of a powerful individual, not only in our society, but in the world? You know, he's got Instagram, that WhatsApp, which is really big. Might not be big around here, but it's really big. They got a billion visitor users on that. And as I understood, they have 2.4 billion people on their different platforms between Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, and also using their messenger service. I think the messenger service is really lumped in with the Facebook part. But nonetheless, he's got a lot of control there. And really, should his company be his company, or should it be broken up? Is it wrong for one person? You know, I did a few Google searches about most powerful people in the world, and Mark Zuckerberg came up in the top 10 numerous times. In the most recent one I saw, I don't know that he was right there, but Bill Gates was up there. But you know, when you think about Bill Gates, he's not hands on making the decisions. You know, he's a philanthropist now, pretty much. I'm sure if he wants to, you know, have something done, he gets involved.
Sure.
But the reality of it is success. Can you have too much success in this world, in this country? Everybody is out there wants to be successful in what they're doing and what they're undertaking, and in business, whether it's in business or in life or wherever it is. You know, success is something people want, and it's an innate drive in the human species to want to, you know, be successful. You know, it's that greed is good thing.
Well, and to some extent, maybe it is, right? It drives people.
Well, Gordon Gekko says it's
– well, yeah.
And if Gordon Gekko says it's good.
I think when you get to – we talked about this a little bit earlier, but so Zuckerberg owns 60% of Facebook, right? So he can't be overridden by the board.
Right.
So we talked about that. But, you know, you look at guys out there as an example. So Steve Jobs, right? Apple fired him from the company he founded.
Yeah.
And I think maybe a guy like Zuckerberg is looking and saying, I'm not going to allow that to happen to me. I'm going to control the destiny of this organization.
Well, I understand. But, you know, even the Prime Minister of England or the President of the United States or the whatever the guy is in Canada, you know, he has to deal with a legislature.
Sure.
He has to deal with a court system. He has to deal with the laws of his institution that he's at the head of.
Well, but
Mark Zuckerberg doesn't have to
deal
with
that. Well,
but
he has to deal with the laws of the FCC. He has to deal with those laws. I mean, he's still governed by laws. He just
– But the law – and that's true, but the laws are antiquated for the type of social media structure that exists today. They're not built for the environment that currently exists. And one of the solutions about the situation is whether or not the Federal Communications Commission should take a more active role in oversight of Facebook, which makes some sense. But the real question is, he created this industry.
So
he made it.
He did. He invented it.
And when you really come up with it, you make it from the beginning and the whole thing, is it yours or should the government be able to take it away from you?
You should get some Make Facebook Great Again hats.
I don't know. You know, it's confusing. You know,
well, I think it is confusing. I think there's probably no cut and dry piece to it. I think the irony is most of the people that would be involved in making laws governing Facebook in Congress have no idea how Facebook really works or what it is as a social tool, right?
I agree.
But the point becomes is that if there were podcasts 100 years ago, we'd have probably had this conversation about Henry Ford, right? Does this guy is one of the most powerful magnates in the country have too much power? He did also happen to be a socialist, by the way.
Well, I'm glad you're bringing up Henry Ford on this because Henry Ford was prohibited by the Automobile Association to manufacture cars. He didn't have the licensing from them. And he was sued by the Automobile Manufacturers Association that didn't want him to make automobiles because they owned the patent on it. And he won his case and broke that monopoly that organization had allowing him to make automobiles. And that's, you know, that was a big deal. And so he was actually the beneficiary of breaking up monopolies.
Sure. But, you know, go one step further though, and there was competition, right? So Facebook effectively, for what it is, has no competition. Twitter is certainly as big or almost as big, but Twitter doesn't have, you know, it's not the same platform, right? You don't use it in the same way. But if you look at, you know, Henry Ford also believed he was just going to build the Model T forever and he wasn't going to add hydraulic brakes and he wasn't going to add any safety features beyond what he had because he believed that what he built was what the public needed.
Right.
And so his own son, Edsel Ford, is the one that said, no, we have to build the Model A. We have to do these things.
Right.
We have to add hydraulic brakes. Dodge was already doing that. And there's famous conversations between him and one of the Dodge brothers where he was like, hey, you know, hydraulic brakes, you know.
There was competition for him.
Right.
There is no real competition. Now that
– Maybe we should start a social media platform, Wes.
Well, and what you're saying is true, and that's one of the things that the right or the more conservative usually says is that, hey, look, in given time, there will be a competitor that will emerge and challenge the veracity mm-hmm. of the dominance that Facebook has.
And it is relatively young. It's really only been mainstream the last 10 years, right? It was exclusive to college campuses before that.
As a media platform, which is what it is. And by the way, the only reason why it isn't already being regulated heavily is that Facebook doesn't charge people to use it.
Right.
And because they're not being charged to use it, there is no commerce relationship there. It's a free platform.
Right.
Obviously, they make money, and they make money by getting people to buy ads on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were preventing a particular group from buying ads, then they would have a suit against them and it would get resolved and so on. So the problem with Facebook is that it's a unique situation. It's very hard to even imagine a commerce situation. Well, you know, that's not true. You know, broadcast media was broken up as monopoly. It was not allowed to consolidate into monopolies. Initially, the FCC regulated the number of stations someone could own. And that got overturned in the 80s during the Reagan administration. And they were allowed to buy more stations. And now you have these mega media conglomerates.
That was at the same time that the equal time thing went away, right?
Yes.
If you gave one party half.
Right. And that was I really think that equal time thing was a problem. You know, it used to be that if something was editorial or it was news. Now it's editorial or it's news, but nobody knows which is which.
Right,
what
I agree.
Going on.
I don't and disagree.
They got the same guy that's doing the news doing the editorial, and there's no little sign up that says editorial opinion. And it used to be that if you had an editorial opinion and if anybody had an opposing point of view, they were allowed equal time. And there's so much of a division in this country. That's one of the problems with it.
I have a frustration that goes along with that, and I don't want to get too far off topic, but it is in the same vein. Have you seen – I don't know what print media you read or if you read any print media, but if you read any like automotive magazines or even what we've talked before, I collect some firearms magazines. There are actually advertising editorials, like editorials they call them, right? Where it's an article written about it, written by the manufacturer of that product.
Advertorials.
Advertorial, yes.
Right. You know, I mean, it's insane. The lines have been blurred so much that journalism has really become a sink well. Now, it used to be that if you wanted to get influence in editorial, you had to have a friend who would take a bribe from you.
Right, yeah.
And then you could call them up and say, Blue Horseshoe likes Romeo, and then they would run the article.
Now, look, I don't want to speak for Wes, but if someone would like to bribe us to discuss something that we're in favor of, I do have a price.
Yeah. Well, I don't feel that way at all. I would never accept a bribe. I would want it to be done properly as a political donation.
Oh, that's fair.
Right. Yeah. Let's take a break here, and when we get back, I think it would be interesting to talk about Chris Hughes, who was one of the co-founders of Facebook, who is calling for the breakup or regulatory involvement of Facebook. He's probably lost at least one friend over that recent New York Times editorial. But let's go to those sponsors.
For the Optimist Club, this is spot number one, Radio 30 Seconds.
What's a kid's future worth to you? Could you find an hour or two to help a kid grow up positively? That's all it takes when you're an optimist. We're role models, mentors, leaders, and friends to kids who want to do well. You can lend them a helping hand by volunteering your time for activities and programs that make a positive difference in the lives of young people. If you care about kids, the time to act is here and now. Become an optimist and bring out the best in kids.
My friend Brandon Gallagher.
When I first started playing hockey, people always told me I was too small, but I never let that stop me.
They say that about me too. But here at the Shriners Hospital for Children, kids like me with orthopedic conditions get the best care.
That's right. This is a place of hope, where kids learn that they can achieve their dreams.
To learn more and support Shriners Hospital for Children, call or go online today.
What is Rotary? We're a network of people like you. In fact, we're the original social network. More than 1 million of us live just about everywhere you can think of. And we mean everywhere. We get together to exchange ideas, grow our businesses, and make new friends. We volunteer to help our own communities or someone else's. We're right around the corner. Come join us. The name is Rotary. Rotary International.
Welcome back. This is Wes Berry, and we're in our Success Factor segment. We've been talking a little bit about what's going on with Facebook and government involvement. And, success is an important thing. It's part of the human drive. But can someone or something be too successful? And who has the right to decide? You know, it's a confusing area. And uh, I, I And I am usually further right on these sort of things.
You've been kind of left today a little bit,
but
Wes.
It's a little confusing.
Feeling
to
okay?
Me. I mean, well, it's confusing to me because I do believe in a free market and that the free market will eventually sort itself out on this. But I don't know if it'll sort itself out in my lifetime, and I don't know whether or not I really feel comfortable with a far left Mark Zuckerberg running Facebook, you know, and it's not. It doesn't matter whether it's Facebook or anything else. There's a real problem in this country about the way news is shared, and the news has become so fixed on one side or the other. You can't watch CNN and be listening to a presidential debate, for example, and switch the channel to Fox News, you don't even think you're listening to the same conversation. Like it's
you're not
even the same subject.
No, it's like two completely different worlds.
And there's just not the right uniformity. And, it sounds like I'm saying people should all conform. Well, you know, they have to have an identity for who you are, an identity for who your family is, an identity for where you work or whether or not which football team you root
right,
for.
Right.
I mean, those things are fundamental to society's mortar that sort of cements this together.
Right.
And it's confusing because we don't seem to have that anymore. You doing all right there?
No, my chair broke there. Yeah, hey, I caught it with my leg.
Very well done. So I don't know that Mark Zuckerberg should have all the decisions on this. And even his business partner, who was a co-founder, Chris Hughes, doesn't think that Facebook should be allowed to continue in its current manifestation.
I feel like if Hughes still owned 51% or 49%, he would think Facebook should continue if there was financial benefit for him. But I think because there's no benefit to him, he doesn't think it should continue.
Well, you know, it doesn't mean that there'll be less financial benefit for those owners. It really doesn't mean that. You know, when John D. Rockefeller owned Standard Oil and they broke Standard Oil up, he became more wealthy as a result of the breakup. It was a situation where the parts were more valuable than the whole, because all of a sudden there became competition between different oil companies,
right,
and that competition drove up volume and sales. And by the way, you know, J.D. Rockefeller, he took gasoline to market. Nobody knew what to do with gasoline. It was just being burnt off. It wasn't used in combustion engines. And he saw that waste and found a purpose for it and wound up making a boatload of cash as
result. Right, yeah. Most of the original vehicles, even the original, you know, fuel-powered engines were diesel, right? They weren't
right,
gas. That's
right.
True.
And then when it was forced to be broken up, the value of the – he just owned, you know, the same – he owned stock in 20 different companies instead of one, and he wound up making more money as a result. So I don't – and by the way, you know, after the first couple billion dollars, I don't know that another couple billion makes a lot of difference, okay?
Right.
So I don't really know that Mark Zuckerberg needs to have, you know, another pile of cash when he can't even see to the end of the line now.
No, there's that famous quote. I don't even remember what movie it's from, but where he says, "Well, what can you do with $300 million that you couldn't do with $250 million? Right? What's that difference?" And it's probably pretty germane to you. But so here's the thing with Facebook, and I think it's very commonplace today. Everyone uses Facebook. My phone tracks my amount of time in social media, and it's like 24 to 35, depending on the day of the time I'm on my phone, is spent searching social media. And maybe that's not healthy, and that's probably a separate conversation. But I also think that when radio first came out, you know, radio probably monopolized everything going on in the world. And I think then when television came out, and when the internet first started, right, and people – when there was first consumerism on the internet, I think people thought it was going to – and it did change the world. Don't get me wrong.
Correct. And in radio and television, when it first came out, the government got involved. The Federal Communications Commission became a thing, and the Federal Communication Systems limited the scope of ownership on stations. That's why there became networks to be able to feed things to different stations, mm-hmm, rather than one big organization running it. And at the same time, they also had mandates with regards to equal time for opposing viewpoints, and all that stuff came out when those things were going on. I think, as much as I don't like saying it, I think that things like Facebook have gone beyond the scope that of just commerce, and when they go beyond the scope of commerce to the extent that something like Facebook has, there is a place for some government regulation in there. It's in everything else that we deal with in life, and there is limited regulation. But right now, as I understand it, in Illinois, they have some issue with Facebook about facial recognition, and that it's not something that they are allowing there, and they've racked up billions of dollars in fines. Maybe not billions of dollars in fines, but that's what I heard anyways. It wasn't necessarily
on Fox News.
Wasn't from a reliable source. It was on CNN. But so the issue really is, and they're not paying the fines.
Right. Because they disagree with them, or because?
I don't know. But it's, I think the reality is that Facebook has a bigger stick than the politicians in Illinois have.
Well, that's probably true.
I mean, I think I remember maybe it was Uber. I think maybe it was Uber that was worried about regulation getting out there and limiting how they knew they were breaking the law in the first place,
right.
Uber, because you had to have a taxi medallion to do this stuff. But they sent out stuff to everybody that had an Uber app and said, hey, write your congressman or write your senator, state senator, or whatever it is. He's got a bigger megaphone. There used to be an expression that you never want to get in an argument with someone who buys ink by the barrel.
Yeah, that's a fair statement.
It's a fair statement. It had to do with newspapers. It had to do with, if you got on the wrong side of the owner of a big newspaper, you were going to be in trouble, Hearst, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why newspaper monopolies became not allowed. So, and then they came after we solved that problem by breaking them up. Then we waited long enough that we forgot, and then we allowed the same type of monopolies
right.
to emerge again. And I really think that there's too much to Facebook.
So I don't actually disagree with you, I think. But you have to remember there was another platform. There was MySpace, which was basically the same application. But Zuckerberg just did it a little differently.
I understand. He did it much better. The thing is that it used to be that a compulsory military service brought people together and homogenized everybody to get along with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that anymore. Some countries have a compulsory service program that brings everybody together. Then maybe they're working in something equivalent to the Peace Corps or whatever
it is.
Right.
Israel.
And it puts them together so that we have that social identity. Our social identity now in this country really is the social media platforms that we engage on. Even my wife, is going around taking pictures of stuff all the time and posting it and, come on. If we're going to have something that really becomes the fabric of our society, is it right to be controlled by one man? One man.
I got to be honest with you. I agree that it should not be. So just my couple of editorial comments to that. One is just for future reference for everybody, if you're going to choose to follow or be friends with Wes or his wife, choose his wife. She's much more charming and much more interesting. But secondarily, I think you are correct in that having one man, regardless of his view, left or right, whether I agree with what he thinks or doesn't think, it's scary when one man has seemingly all the power. But I'm not sure that Zuckerberg has the power that it would infer, right? Facebook doesn't control the message. They're just how the message gets out.
That's true. However, if you've done any marketing on Facebook, you'll find that they disapprove ads all the time for arbitrary reasons. And if you decide to post an ad that's political, they disapprove you because you have to go through a different process to be authorized for that.
So they don't want to be political?
And it takes forever to get approved. That's if you want to run an ad. See, the ads are different than the free content, and the free content is almost impossible to get to go viral anymore. You have to do the paid content, and the paid content, they have all sorts of arbitrary decisions on what they'll allow and what they won't allow. And really, it doesn't matter whether they're doing anything wrong or not. If it is a situation that allows for misuse to occur, then that situation shouldn't be allowed. You know, in business, you always want to have two-person integrity, for example, on things that are involve money or inventory or things of that nature. And the reason why you want two-person integrity, and then you have to rotate it as well, is you don't want one person to be put in a position where he can make the decisions all the time, because if he can do that, then eventually corruption will find its way in.
I agree with you, but I think that, you know, to simplify a little bit, I'm going to use a movie there's a movie called TV show called Firefly, and it had a movie that spun off called Serenity. And one of the guys in that, his job was he like tracked all of the signals in the world, and he just went through data, and it was really, and one of his important lines, he's actually murdered over the, but he says, well, you can't stop the signal. Well, I think it's the same thing with you in the internet age. You can't stop the way social media works, be it with Twitter, be it with Facebook, be it with whatever. So if you heavily regulate Facebook, you just create an opening for whatever the next thing is. You don't stop the problem. You stop the way in which the signal, so to speak, is getting out.
You know, it's a confusing issue. It's complicated. And it's odd that I would find myself not on the side of free markets on this particular issue. But we need to have, I believe, a less – the decision has to be less about one person involved on these things. And I think that we're going to see some federal communication initiatives that are from their commission that are going to limit some of the discretionary decision making on social media platforms. And if not, I don't know that breaking it up really works. But you know, when they broke up the phone companies in the United States, what they did is they left the infrastructure in place.
Right.
The railroads, same thing. They left the railroad access was left in place, but they still found a way to break up the access points to it. And I think that that's what's coming for Facebook. We'll find out. I also understand that when that sort of thing happens, you wind up getting polarization again. And that's not so good either. So we're going to have to let this one stew for a while. But if this is something that's important to you, you should start keeping your ear to the ground about it, because I'm pretty sure that whatever change there is, there will be some changes involved in Facebook from a regulatory standpoint. But we'll see.
Could we just make people have to fact check things before they post it on Facebook? Because that would be that'd be glorious.
You know that little check mark that they put on the page, the little blue check mark up next to your name, not to your name, but to my name, because I'm a legitimate.
Well,
that means that I was verified as.
I thought that was Twitter. I didn't know that was.
They had that too.
Okay,
but that little check mark means something, but nobody knows what the hell it means. So, you know, it's just like, because I was involved in this bestseller thing with my book, I learned a little bit about bestsellers. And in the New York Times, if they put a little squiggle, I think it was, next to your number, in terms of where you win, it means that you got there through bulk purchases that they think were inappropriate. But they still put you on the list. Now, this little squiggle, nobody knows what the heck it means. Except a handful of people. And that handful of people ain't telling anybody. So, you know, this whole, you know, it's like the warning on a pack of cigarettes. You know, it's in big letters even, you know, or I think it is. But nobody pays attention to it.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, you could put anything you want in that warning because no one's – they've read it once. They're not reading it ever.
No one's going to know. So I think that there's either going to be a Sherman antitrust thing that's going to come up, or there's going to be an FCC thing that's going to come up. And I think that the Democrats are going to push it. And I think the Republicans are going to dance around it. And then they're going to smile and nod, and it's going to get through. Maybe the one thing that they actually are willing to have happen, but they, you know, they won't admit that they like each other, you know. Don't forget about my book if you get a chance. Big things have small beginnings, and we're going to hopefully enjoy your company again soon. Thank you very much for being with us. Have a great day.